Hi, I'm Clemmy Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. My ambition with this podcast is to remind people and myself that every person has a story. The same goes with brands. And in this case, the brand in question is our sponsor, F&F Clothing, who have absolutely challenged my preconceptions of what a supermarket retailer can offer. There's an unbelievable amount that goes on behind the scenes at F&F Clothing. They're one of the biggest retailers to take action towards becoming a sustainable brand, as well as their commitment to inclusive sizing and diversity. All these unexpected but excellent things are what make me feel chuffed to have them on board as a sponsor. So a big thank you to F&F Clothing for partnering with Honestly Podcast and supporting my mission of transparency, truth and breaking the mould of what's expected. Hi, welcome to Honestly Podcast. I'm Clemmy Telford and I'm here to do one of my favourite things. No, not being really rubbish at folding clothes, having a properly frank, open chat about tricky, sticky and often not spoken about subjects. Today we're talking to a freelance journalist and founder of an Instagram account called Sober Girls Society. As well as being sober herself, she's a fountain of knowledge for other babes wanting to go sober. She is Millie Gooch. Hello, Millie. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
This feels like a strange blind date in some ways,
yeah,
doesn't it?
It does.
We met like 5 minutes ago outside. I hope it's a successful blind date. So, as the title of the podcast suggests, this is all about being honest. And to get us both in the mood, I like to start with a quick fire round. Oh, are you ready?
I'm ready.
A great meal or great sex?
Great sex.
Fame or fortune?
Fortune.
Leave or remain?
Remain.
Yeah, everyone panics because they're like, I want to say the right answer, but in your head you can't remember which is which.
I just thought you meant generally, yeah. And then I realised you meant in terms of Brexit.
Reincarnation, probable or not a chance?
Probable.
Social media, good or bad?
Good.
What star sign are you?
Leo.
Have you ever committed a crime?
No.
Do you believe in God?
No.
This comes from a weird personal experience of my own. Have you ever peed in a swimming pool?
Yes.
Thank you. It's like a personal battle I've got with my husband who says that nobody does and I said that everybody does.
Yes.
When did you last cry?
Oh, last week.
When did you last weigh yourself?
Last week.
Biggest regret?
Not going sober sooner.
Ooh. When or where are you happiest?
Probably at home with my family and with my friends.
If you went to prison, what do you think you'd miss most?
Oh, Netflix.
Good answer. Favourite mocktail of choice?
It's something with a non-alcoholic spirit, so something like a Seedlip or a Cedars with a tonic.
Although, actually, I have to say, having been pregnant a few times, that actually makes my stomach turn a bit. It's like, yeah, you're a bit hormonal, a bit weird, and you're trying to drink it pretending everything's normal. Yeah. It's not. Total aside, but my friend during pregnancy, this is you, Polly Clifton, started this thing called a gin rim, where she put a rim of gin around the top of her glass and the rest was tonic to try and give herself the gin and tonic feel.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. So gin rim, you heard it here first. Okay, now moving on to the big topic. Your big topic is sobriety. This episode is very much a personal interest piece. I definitely describe myself as sober curious. In my youth, my drinking was out of control. Every night ended up with memory loss. I've definitely curtailed that now, thankfully, seeing as I'm a mother to three. But I continue to ask myself if I still like drinking or whether it's just something I do out of habit. Anyway, this isn't about me, it's about you, Millie. So the first obvious question is, how long have you been sober? Do you call it sober or teetotal? Or
I tend to call it sober.
Yeah.
And I've been sober since February 2018, so about 14 months
now. Yeah, do you know what? I know it's 14 months because that's when my daughter was born. So 14 months. Can I ask how old you are as well?
27.
So you went sober at
26.
How did you come to give up drinking? Was it a gradual thing? Had you been sober curious for a while or did it just suddenly happen?
I had dipped in and out. I'd done the odd dry January, the odd sober October, but I had sort of my binge drinking really started when I went to university. It got progressively worse. And I think when I started working, I got to a point where I realised that I couldn't continue drinking the way I was, but I still did. Like you said, I always ended up with memory loss. I always blacked out, which I now know is not normal, but I used to think that everyone did that. Yeah. I started getting that very bad anxiety that we all sort of speak about now, but rather than it just being a Sunday evening thing, it started creeping into my everyday life. So it started moving into Monday and Tuesday, and I got into a real cycle behaviour. So I wasn't necessarily someone who was, you know, putting vodka on my cornflakes, but I would go out drinking all weekend. I'd just about feel right again on Wednesday, and then it'd get to Thursday and I'd start it all over again. And I just got to the point where I was in this complete cycle of being really unhappy, drinking through my unhappiness, and then just carrying it on and just keep going round and round.
I can definitely relate. My 20s were definitely my most outlandish time, and that really rings a lot of bells because obviously, like everyone, I drunk my way through university and then landed my first job on the other side of it. And you kind of are used to this habit of that partying, but suddenly you've got responsibility. Me and my friends talk about, well, I talk about a lot, there is Black Sunday, which was a day of lots and lots of booze, and then it was followed by Black Monday, and my anxiety got out of control. And I categorically remember thinking around then that something has got to change. And did you suddenly announce it to people, or is it something you made a decision in your head?
I actually announced it to everyone. I would say the way I did it was probably not the way that everyone chooses to do it. I know a lot of people at first of all, like, they try and hide it and ease themselves in gently. They'll sort of say, you know, I'm on antibiotics, or but I just decided I was going to announce it, and as long as everyone knew, then no one would question me.
To make you accountable, almost.
Yeah, because then I knew if I told my friends as well that they would try and help me, which I don't think they did at first, but once they knew I was serious, then they did.
And how were people's reactions?
I always say they were very underwhelming.
I got something to tell you.
When I told everyone, I thought my mum would be like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. And I thought my friends would be like, good for you, you've needed to do it for so long. But really, they were like, oh, okay, sure. I think we've all been there where, you know, you've said, I'm so hungover. Yeah, I'm never drinking again. So when you do say it to people, it's hard for them to be super supportive because they just kind of think it's another thing that you're saying.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't that my friends were unsupportive, but I think it took them a while to be like, oh, she's serious about this. Yeah.
I've had three big phases of sobriety while I was pregnant. And the things I noticed during that time is that after a while, people really smell when they're drinking. I'm talking about weddings, but like Prosecco or champagne breath is not very nice. People repeat themselves, don't they?
100%.
You're having these conversations like, oh, wow, we've just looped back to where we started. Any other observations of you of drunk people?
Oh, people have no awareness of personal space. They get really up in your face. And rather than just, you know, talking in your ear or talking away from you, and because they're physical. So loud anyway, you're like, you really don't need to get this close to me. And then that's when you smell them, I think, because they're even closer.
Maybe, yeah.
That's the thing I get. And yeah, the repetition is always one. I hear the same stories over and over again.
Certainly with my husband at weddings, it's really hard to find him attractive when he's really drunk and I'm really sober.
Yeah, I've also started to notice people's phases of drinking. So with my friends, I can say, right, you know, this is you at two drinks. I know at two drinks, you get really lovey and soppy.
Emotional.
I know at three drinks, you want to dance loads. I know at four drinks, you know, you start looking at boys around the bar. Right, I can pinpoint their
faces of
drinking. I think in some ways, my friends find it a good and a bad thing because they don't have to have that anxiety because they can say to me, tell me exactly what I said and what I did.
Truth.
So I can be like their CCTV of the night out. Yeah. But then in other ways, they kind of don't want to hear what they did or said. So I think it's a mixed one. But now,
so in some ways, sorry to put words in your mouth, do you feel like you get the most out of your weekends?
Oh, 100%. I feel like, I always say, did you ever see Bernard's Watch, the programme?
No.
He had this like magical watch. It was a programme I used to watch as a kid, and he just stopped time and everyone around him, and he had all this extra time.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've got Bernard's Watch. Because while everyone's sort of weekend is cut in half, I've got this entire Sunday that I can do whatever I want.
Well,
with
you can fit in the exercise as well as the going for brunch.
My anxiety just went straight down because I wasn't in that cycle anymore. I'd sort of broken it. And now I always say if I do get sort of anxiety, you know, it doesn't come around that often, but when it does, I'm very aware of it. I can like feel it coming on. I feel a bit stressed today.
Yeah.
And I'm so in sort of like tune with my emotions now. So there's loads of things I could do. I'm like, okay, well, I need to take some time out today and I need to go and exercise and I need to make sure I drink loads of water and take my vitamin D tablet. So I'm really aware of it now. So even if I still get it, which I'd say, you know, it's tiny, tiny fraction of what it was when I was drinking, then I'm able to manage it that much better now without alcohol.
And interestingly, probably once upon a time when you started feeling like that would be the time that you turned to drink.
Exactly.
This is a problem when you're already stressed. We all know it, you know, you finish work on a Friday and you go for a drink to relieve the stress, and then it's no surprise, is it? If you started drinking with stress, when you wake up the next morning, that stress is just there and you feel less able to cope.
Yeah, it's such a really hard cycle. I would go out and then I would do silly things, and then the next day I'd beat myself up about them, and then because I'd want to forget about them, then I'd drink more, and it's just so hard to get out and break that cycle.
I think for me what was amazing, and this isn't sounding patronising, is that you were able to help yourself relatively young.
Mm. I've spoke to other people about it before, and I say, like, now I probably don't necessarily identify myself as an alcoholic, but given another 5 years, I probably could have if I'd have carried on the way I was going.
It's like more disordered drinking, isn't it, rather than an alcohol problem.
Yeah.
It's just, but it's, again, it's really hard to know. Definitely at uni, I mean, it's the norm.
Yeah. 100%.
It's like the only way we know how to...
Yeah, I never felt like I had a choice to not drink.
Well, and just given.
Yeah, and I spoke to someone else about this, actually, who's sober now, and she said she feels awful. She had a girl in her halls of residence who didn't drink, and they said they completely ostracised her. And they said she was boring, thought she was weird. And now she says, I feel so awful about that.
Yeah.
But I've actually read that they're looking at introducing alcohol-free halls of residences now in
the
universities.
Yeah, because imagine everyone else around you is trash.
Yeah, I think uni is probably one of the hardest times that you could come out as
being
sober.
And the problem is, I was definitely on the far end of the drinking. You know, that's if you become the girl who gets hammered, that's the thing, isn't it? And, you know, you're fun, you come to a party and you're larger than life. And then it must be quite hard, I don't know if you found it, to kind of step down from that role, you know?
I mean, I was the party girl of my group. It would be like, oh, if we need to go out, Millie will definitely say that she'll go out.
Yeah.
And I did feel like that responsibility, like they called me Generous Millie, because after like two or three drinks, I'd just start buying everyone new drinks. So I really worried. That was one of my biggest worries when I gave up drinking, was that I didn't really know who I was without drink, because I was the party girl. That's how I defined myself, by how hard I could party, all the different places that I could go to. And I did really worry. That was one of my biggest fears, and that's what I really like to push now about, because when I first gave up, I read a few drinks that sort of said, you know, it's going to change your entire life, you're going to have to give up this and give up that, and I kind of thought I actually still want to be the party girl just without alcohol.
And do you think you've achieved that?
I do, actually. All my friends say you party harder, because the two excuses I would ever use for saying no to a party would be, I don't want to be hungover tomorrow and I haven't got the money to do it.
It's drinking soda water work, although sometimes it can be really expensive.
It can but if you do come out and just have a water, people will try and drag you out, and they, like, I don't really get tired. No one has to put me in a taxi anymore at 2 o'clock. I don't end my night crying in the
that's
toilet.
The thing. Although it's obviously always easy to get an Uber, you can actually get public transport home. You're like, I've got my wits about me.
And now I drive, so I don't mind staying out too longer, because I feel like I can get home safely. And
That is the ultimate. Just pop in my car.
Yeah,
I always try and pepper these with a few facts.
Okay.
And I've read that according to the Office of National Statistics, people working managerial and professional occupations, and in addition to the highest earners, are most likely to drink alcohol in the past week, i.e. most likely to have a disordered relationship with alcohol. My career was in advertising, where drinking and also quite a lot of drug use were part of the culture, and I'm sure you've probably experienced that working in the media, where, again, we had a free bar every Thursday night. And that's where the boundaries become really blurred, you know? It's like, oh, you're really only going to get in there if you come to the free bar and get trashed.
Yeah. We used to have a bar every Friday at work, and also I used to go to so many sort of like fashion and beauty dinners, and there'd be drink galore there.
Yeah, flowing.
And that's actually kind of when my anxiety started quite a lot as well, because I was more comfortable drinking around my friends.
Exactly, because, where it doesn't matter.
Yeah, even if I was anxious the next day, they kind of would all say, oh, you know, you were just drunk, and we know that.
Yeah.
But when I started drinking around work people, it was the next day that I thought, oh, God, what did I say? You know, did I say anything embarrassing?
Did I ask for a pay rise?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no. Like, and I just used to worry. So that sort of is where it dialed up a notch, I'd say.
Yeah,
but it is so hard to turn it down. Even now, I still go to a lot of these dinners. And luckily, most of the people now know that I don't drink, because I've made such a big thing about it. But when I first sort of started, I'd say, oh, I'm not drinking. They'd be like, really? Are you sure? We've got champagne, we've got wine. Do you want vodka? Like, we've got this.
Yeah, people feel...
I don't know if you've read Catherine Gray's book, The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober. She talks about the psychology of how closely we associate drinking and celebration.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, you know, it's your wedding, we'll have a toast, you get a promotion, you get a bottle of wine. And so when you say, no, I'm not drinking, like it feels like you're turning down the celebration.
Yeah.
That's the psychology that people get in their heads.
The party pooper.
Yeah, that's like when people say, but you have to drink, it's my birthday. And you're like, I'm here, I'm going to sing happy birthday to you, I'm going to stay there till 3 a.m. or whenever you want to.
If you're confident in your own decision making on that, then people tend to respect it.
Yeah.
It's if they think there's a chink in your arm, oh, go on.
Yeah.
Just have one.
I always say that it's all about the confidence. If people say to me, oh, go on, have one, which they rarely do now, it'll be just maybe people I don't know. Yeah, they don't. They're like, oh, I will just give up. But if I ever used to say, oh, you know, I'm trying not to drink at the moment, or if you ever do use, oh, I'm on antibiotics, people say, oh, get your instructions out, you can drink on most antibiotics now. Whereas if you say, no, I'm not drinking anymore, and you're quite assertive with it, then people
do
are like,
you use the language, I'm not drinking, or do you say, I'm sober, or
I say, I actually don't drink. Like, if someone offers me a drink, I'll say, no, thank you, I actually don't drink. And then they kind of back off, really.
Yeah.
They don't really ask anymore. But I went to Amsterdam, actually, and we went to this really nice restaurant, and we got the bill back, and they said, oh, Mill, you can pay less because you didn't drink.
Yeah.
And then we looked down the bill, and they said, God, what are these really expensive cocktails? And they asked the bar lady, and she said, oh, they're the mocktails.
Yeah.
I was like, they're about €8 each.
What on earth have you put in there?
Yeah.
Liquid gold is so annoying, isn't it?
So we ended up splitting it, because I said, they're just as expensive as your drinks.
Oh, do you get sick of elderflower cordial?
It's so much elderflower cordial.
No, I'll just have tap water, please.
Yeah.
It's free.
It is getting better, though. The selection is getting there. People are recognising it more, which is great.
But actually, on a night out, there's only so many kind of sugary drinks. Because that's the thing I think you also realise is that so much of your hangover is probably from drinking six sugary drinks in 5 hours or something.
If I have more than 2 or 3 mocktails, I feel quite sick.
Yeah. Here's something you might not know about F&F Clothing. They work with Genealogia. They are the industry's first software that can share the environmental impact of a pair of jeans. Yup, each pair is graded on how sustainable they are. The lower the score, the more sustainable the garment is. This means they're continuously monitoring and reducing their environmental footprint. I know, right? Surprising, but great. What are the things you find challenging? How about dancing, dating, having sex, and also I think family occasions I tend to lubricate with a glass of wine.
Dating is definitely a challenging one.
How do you go about that? Do you let people know in advance? Is it on... Yeah, how do you let people know?
I always tell people in advance, actually. So I use dating apps like most millennials, and Bumble actually has a feature now where you can say whether you don't drink or not, which I found very helpful.
Just out there.
It's just there, and it just has like a little sort of X with the drink in. But even if people haven't read that, then if they say, oh, do you want to go for a drink? I always say, yeah, that's fine, but I actually don't drink. And I'd rather tell people straight away.
Yeah.
And I always say that's not necessarily for them, because I feel like I owe them to tell them. But it's so that I feel comfortable when I go on the date.
Yeah.
So I'm not stressing right up until the point of the date where I'm like...
Get through that transit.
Yeah, oh God, they're going to ask me what I drink and then I'm going to have to explain it in person. If I just say it and it's out there, if they don't want to talk to me again, that's fine. Like, I don't want to know them either. I always say it's a bit like being a celiac, as in drinking does not agree with me. It might agree with other people, but I'm not going to expect them to.
No.
Yeah, and I don't judge them at all, so...
But do you find that people start wanting to talk to you about it all the time?
They do. It's a real mix, because some people I know say, I hate when people ask me why I don't drink, it's none of their business. But for me, it's kind of like what I've built Sober Girl Society on now is I really like to talk to people about it, and they go, oh, that's a really interesting way of looking at it. And I like to be able to challenge people and speak about it. So for me, I always say, ask me why I don't drink, because I like talking about it.
I was actually looking on your feed last night, and there was a bit of a pokey conversation about talking about alcoholism, actually, and I can't remember what they'd said, but you flipped it over, and it's like, how you're not talking about what you haven't got.
Yeah.
You don't, you know, it's not about a life without something, is it?
Yeah, no, it's everything I've gained from it. And that's one of the reasons that I actually started Sober Girl Society was because when I looked on Instagram, I found a lot of, you know, great recovery communities, but I found a lot was quite sort of retrospective, whereas I wanted something that really looked forward about what you gain in sobriety. So, you know, I've got better health, I've got more energy, I'm more productive.
Probably more money in the bank.
More money in the bank, exactly. All that sort of things that people don't seem to concentrate on.
Yeah.
It's seen as sort of, you know, you get over an addiction or you recover from something or you've given something up and this is all the things that you're missing out on. And not enough people seem to look at it from a, these are all the things that you can gain from it.
Yeah.
I could consistently beat myself up about things that I did when I was drunk or, you know, all the things that I don't get to do with my life anymore. But to me, my life has categorically been like a million times better since I gave up drinks. So.
And actually, if we're all honest, the really like lovely sparkly bit of having a drink is so early on in the night.
Yeah, but it's that.
You know, if we could all capture that forever and just stay in that kind of loose shoulders, but it doesn't. You know, it's no way. Yeah.
But I love people are starting to talk about JOMO now, which is the joy of missing out.
Yeah,
which
it's
I think
true,
is great.
It?
And that's
it's like when you're on Instagram and you're at home in your pajamas and people are out. And you're like, I have
I'm so glad.
I am not envious.
I didn't necessarily like the taste of alcohol, which sounds silly, but
you don't love it from that point of view.
Yeah, you could have put a glass of champagne in front of me and I just would have necked it because I loved being drunk. I didn't love drinking.
Yeah.
So I think for me, that sort of one wouldn't really satisfy me anyway. So if I did have that one, I'd want more.
Yeah.
So I think for me, I'm like, no, do you know what? It's done now. My relationship with alcohol, I've packed enough in those years that I don't actually need it anymore. But I think there is a lot now, like you said, about being sober curious and moderation.
Yeah.
People are talking about it more, and if that works for you, great, because even cutting down on alcohol is better than like anything.
Yeah.
So
whatever works for you.
Yeah, 100%. If people want to be sober curious, they just want to drink on special occasions and you know, mindfully drink or drink low alcohol alternatives, then that's great, whatever works for you.
How do you get your kicks now? Because that's the thing, it's the thrill of drinking, right? Do you feel like you're looking for your kicks elsewhere, or is that exactly it? You're not, you're trying to live a more level life?
Yeah, I think I do a lot of high adrenaline sports.
What do you? What do you do?
I like to do a lot of water sports. So not necessarily in the winter, but in the summer, I like to sort of like surf or like paddleboard and do things like that. If I go on holiday and someone says to me, do you want to do this bungee jump? I'm like, yes, I'll do that.
So yeah, you are getting your kicks elsewhere.
I think I get it that way. But also, doing all the things that I just didn't give myself time for when I was drinking, as in like, I love to write, but I was only writing for work purposes, Monday to Friday. I wasn't writing what I wanted to write. So now that I've got this spare time, I've started writing things that I care about. And like things starting Sober Girl Society, I've put my energy into different things. Not everyone gets anxiety. Not everyone gets blackouts.
Oh, no.
And so I did. So that's why I sort of say, if drinking works for you, that's fine. You crack on. I don't judge you for drinking. But for me,
your body didn't like
work. No. But I noticed because we were saying sort of about caffeine, I think my body is just quite sensitive to anything. If I drink too much caffeine, I feel wired. And I think some people are just more prone to
metabolize it better.
Yeah.
Or it's just about how you ride that out. You know, but some people don't mind that feeling
of
being wired or intoxicated. And I don't like it either. I like to be more self-aware. Are there any kind of tips that you'd give anyone who's embarking on this next chapter of their lives?
I would probably say do your research. There's some great books out there. There's some great podcasts out there. There's great communities out there on Instagram. And anything that I sort of immersed myself in everything.
Did you studied it, do you think?
Yeah, I kind of like really looked into it and I thought the more I know, the more it's going to help me make these decisions. And then if I ever was tempted to drink at the start, I was like, oh no. And then I'd remember these kind of like little things that I'd read.
Yeah.
And I think they really helped me.
And to begin with, did you avoid social situations?
I did not. And again, it's so subjective. Yeah. What works for me isn't necessarily going to work for everyone. But I threw myself in at the deep end because I wanted to prove to myself that I could still be fun and sober.
Yeah.
And it's not that I had something to prove to other people, but I kind of felt like I did. So I ripped the Band-Aid off. I went out and I think I just threw myself in it. And then once I realised that I could do it, very early on, it made the rest of it so much easier for me, because I know some people are like, oh my God, I've got my first sober wedding. You know, I've been sober 6 months, but I'm not sure how I'm going to do a wedding, or this is my first night out with my friends. So
have you done, what have you done? Festivals? Have you done sober?
I've done festivals. I've done festivals. I've done holidays. I've done weddings. I've done engagement parties.
I've done dating.
Done everything. I always say I've just got like a renewed appreciation for everything. I read before that when you become sober, you become like a newborn baby, and that's exactly how I feel. I go to festivals and I'm like, oh, I didn't realise that they had like such good food here. I can go on all the rides and I'm not going to throw up. And you just get like a renewed appreciation for things that you just didn't even see because you were just so clouded by
booze. Yeah, just a bit more present really, I suppose. Tell me how social media has helped on your journey.
Do you know what? I've just met the most amazing people. I think when I first started as well, being young, I think was harder as well, because there's some amazing like mum communities out there and like great recovery communities in America. But I couldn't find any young people who were still trying to live like a really busy social life and just didn't want to drink anymore. And I've met some really, really nice people through it, which has been lovely. I met one guy and he messaged me, and it turned out that we literally worked like a waving distance away from each other. So he texted me and said, oh, do you want to go for a non-alcoholic drink after work? So we went for a non-alcoholic drink, got on like an absolute house fire, and now
where's he at in his journey?
So he's about 5 months in now, actually. Okay. We've just started doing like vlog videos together because he's such a character. But
I'm trying to think what his handle is, because I've been following him.
The boy who drank too much.
Yeah,
he's so lovely, and we just get on really well, and I've made like an absolute friend for life. And although like my existing friends are so supportive, and I think my relationships with them have increased tenfold anyway, it is nice to have someone just on that journey as well, so that you can be like, oh, how do you feel about this? Or, you know, when you hit your 6 months, did you go through this? And
yeah, because has there definitely been a thing when you kind of get a year under your belt, you're like, well, I've done that.
Yeah, I think I sort of really settled in about 6 months, because that's when I started Sober Girl Society, when I sort of thought, okay, I was really excited about the initial giving up, and I was like, oh my God, all this amazing stuff. And then I kind of settled into it and was like, oh, this is my life now, what's next?
Yeah.
So that's kind of when I started it, and it has really given me something to do. I think it's given me something to channel my energy into, and all this spare time, and it's also made me like accountable as well, because I think now I couldn't go back, because there's all these people that I'm saying, you know, it's the best thing ever.
And it is that thing, it's a sense of community, isn't it, that you're in it together and people who understand, and nobody has the answers, you know.
No.
It's definitely a bit of a generational thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think.
That's quite often what I say as well. I say, I'm one person, I can give you my experience, but it's not necessarily going to be your experience. So I try and open some of the posts up to be more of a discussion, to say, how do you deal with this? And then people can look down and be like, oh yeah, I'm going to try that, or I'm going to try that. I can give people anything, my story, but it's not going to work for everyone. And it's so hard, because we're constantly made to feel like we should be drinking, and like, especially women, with things like, you know, you've got pink rhubarb gin and everything's like sparkly and different flavours, and you know, all the birthday cards say things like gin dependent women, and it's just so intertwined now and pushed on us, and we don't even realise
I read a piece in The Guardian, I think it was, where in years to come we'll look back, you know, maybe my children's generation, and they'll go, they won't be able to believe that we drunk so much as a norm.
I think we still do need to be talking about it quite a lot, and I do think especially the way that it's been marketed to us needs to be spoken about. Like, it's on every greetings card, it's, you know, every Christmas gift is about Prosecco and gin, and we're constantly made to feel like we should be drinking.
I think normalised,
that really needs to be spoken about. And like all the celebrity ambassadors who are like the faces of alcohol brands, I think it just, the whole sort of thing needs to re-looked at really. And I know a lot of supermarkets are actually getting there with their like non-alcoholic offering. They're really stepping up their game. But there's a lot of sort of like mainstream bars and chains that aren't really cottoning onto it. And I know sometimes if I go in and I say, oh, have you got like a non-alcoholic drink? They're like, oh, they like throw the menu at me. And you're sort of treated like a bit of a second-class citizen. Like, well, if it's not alcohol, I'm not going to waste my time on you. And like, I went into one massive chain, which I won't name, and they said, we do cocktails, but we can't do non-alcoholic cocktails because we can't put them through the till.
Oh, for goodness
sake. And I was like, oh, really? The amount of times I've ordered like a Diet Coke and they'll go, oh, just Diet Coke. And I'm like, yes, just Diet
Coke. But it's discriminating, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. I think that's what needs to be spoken about more is the stigma attached to sobriety.
Yeah.
I think, I know we are talking about it more and more and like it is coming out that more millennials are choosing not to drink. But I think it's about that stigma that, you know, you can't automatically assume because someone's sober that they're boring and yeah. it's all that sort of
But that's thing. Exactly what you're trying to do, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
That's why your feed is really fun and upbeat. And all the positive things. So we now know quite a lot about you, but I always like to throw it out to the internet a bit. So I asked the good people of Instagram, my Instagram, a few questions to get inside their heads. First of all, I asked them if they were sober, and 14% said they were. And then, interestingly, I asked them of the percentages that said no, how many of those were interested in being sober, so were sober curious, and 25% were.
Ah,
that's quite high,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's a really good number.
Then asked, if you choose to be sober, why? And this is what their questions were. I don't want to end up like my parents. For health, to be as present as I can be. Health and no hangovers. I am a terrible drunk. I was drinking dysfunctionally. Supporting my husband who's going through cancer treatment. It started when I was trying to get pregnant and never went back. Wasted calories, no particular reason, just didn't enjoy it anymore. A phobia of losing control. I'm a horrific drunk and the anxiety lasted for days. To get more stuff done, the panic attack the day after makes me feel like I've poisoned my body. Children and hangovers don't work. I'm an addict. It's quite interesting about that observation of lack of control because like I suffer quite a bit with anxiety and the trigger is always lack of control. And then maybe that's what anxiety is.
Yeah.
Is feeling that you've let go of control.
Yeah.
And regretful about that.
I think that is definitely it's actually one of the reasons I've never taken drugs in my life and I've always said because I don't and it's silly again because I feel really hypocritical because I'd always be like, oh, you know, I don't want to take them because I don't want to feel out of control, but then I'd drink like a fish
and, or you jump out of a plane.
Yeah. But it's because, I don't know, it's all marketed, you know, that it's in these sparkly bottles and you feel like, oh, it's totally okay.
Yeah, it's acceptable. But that is definitely it, isn't it? And also for me, when I was hungover, feeling less capable, I really didn't like that I'd be trying to do a piece of work and...
Yeah, exactly.
My brain not functioning properly.
Yeah, but I think it's so interesting that there's, you know, such a variety of why people don't drink. Yeah. I think you always... assume that people, you know, who don't drink have got to that point where they've, you know, maybe identified themselves as an alcoholic, but you know, you need to know that you can stop whenever you want. You don't have to wait till you like hit
some of them aren't dramatic, some of them are out of solidarity for their husband who's ill, or maybe they're ill, maybe someone's going through treatment. You don't know.
People always expect you to sort of have that rock bottom moment with drinking, but I just sort of wanted to stop before I got there. I think, given, like I said, another 5 years, I could have got there.
Yeah.
But I think that's the thing, people don't feel like they can stop drinking until there's actually a problem. But if you want to stop drinking, you can.
And ultimately, you're responsible for yourself.
Yeah.
Then I asked people what the reasons were preventing them from becoming sober. I rarely drink, but don't feel the need to make it a thing by stopping. The occasional old-fashioned tastes awesome. Social situations, I don't want to feel left out. Children, that's been the reason why people drink and also people don't. I love booze, it's fun. Fear of ruining people's buzz on a night out. I like alcohol. Good food and good wine is a winning combination. My husband drinks, so basically peer pressure, which is a shit excuse. Wine is delicious. Gin tastes good. Lack of willpower, stress, and feeling labelled and restricted. So there's a lot about other people's judgment packed into this, isn't there?
Yeah, I think there is that worry of what everyone else can think. But I think it's interesting as well when people are sort of saying wine tastes good, because I think if you can be one of those people who appreciates drink for the taste of it what it is, then you probably have a healthier relationship than I did, because I didn't appreciate it for the taste that I appreciated.
That's why I just asked you about
the
champagne. Like that for me is about making me feel drunk, but I find it a delicious thing, and same with good wine, you know.
But I think that's why, you know, the majority of my followers are actually US or UK, and there's not really a lot from Europe. I don't think I've probably got one single Italian follower.
That's interesting. Never even thought about that.
Yeah, and I think it's because they're sort of taught to appreciate it for the wine that it is and not for what it's going to do to you.
Not the booze culture that
Whereas we appreciate drink for being drunk.
And last of all, I asked them to complete this sentence. Sobriety is impressive, dull, admirable, brave, divisive, empowering, hard work, clean but boring, not appealing, not for me, peace of mind, overrated, refreshing, and your own business. which, yeah.
Each to their own.
Each to their own, yeah, which is it. As I said earlier, I don't know if I did, but my husband said, because I always am talking to him about whether I want to go sober, and he said to me, I don't think you need to make it a thing. It's good to have the space to talk about it. As I said, he's not a man who struggles with anxiety, and he doesn't perhaps understand what it is to be like that. And also, basically, it's just about being self-aware and making sure your choices are your own, I suppose. Which, with alcohol, it's really not, is it?
Yeah, no,
the shots lined
not.
Up on the bar.
Yeah.
It's that, I think with my friend, it's like we're all in this together. And then if I was to step out of it, it makes them perhaps not like the way they feel about themselves either.
That's why I really don't take it personally if anyone says, oh, you're dull, you're boring. I think, well, you've probably got your own issues with alcohol.
Well, maybe so. I am, but I will be feeling very happy tomorrow morning.
I won't be dull and boring when I'm up at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, we're winning it live.
Yeah.
So this is the bit before the end. I've really loved chatting with you and, given me a lot of food for thought. But it's polite to ask if there's anything you've got coming up that you'd like to promote or shout about.
So we've actually started doing a lot of sort of like meetups and events, which is really great because that's a big focus for me. I always say I'm very lucky in that I've had really supportive friends and family, but I get a lot of people message me that say their friends and family aren't like that. So we're trying to get girls together really in their local area. So I do a lot of posts about finding your sober sisters in your area,
which is great.
I had like some girls in Phoenix send me a picture of them all. They'd all met up and I was like, oh my gosh, Phoenix. So yeah, we're starting to do...
Well, you might have to go on a little tour, mightn't you?
Yeah, I know, that's what I said. I was like, road trip, I'm there. So we've started doing that, and we've also just started with little tiny merch. They're little badges.
So
it's sort of like a nice little way. I always say, as if, you know, when you see a pregnant person on the tube, but these are, oh my God, you're sober too. And I think, you know, it's nice to be able to strike up conversations with people.
Yeah, as you're both standing at the bar, kind of paying £5 for some lime cordial.
Yeah, you can nod at them and go,
in it together. Yeah. But yeah, really what people should do is go check out your Instagram.
That would be amazing.
Which is...
Yeah. Sober Girl Society.
Sober Girl Sun and Instagram. And then last but not least, going back to the name of the podcast, who do you wish you could have an honest conversation with, and what would you say? It could be a celeb, a friend, a younger version of yourself, whoever you like.
Oh, but do you know what? Yeah, probably a younger version of myself, because I'd want to tell them to stop. It's hard. I don't like to be like, oh my God, I wish I'd done this. I try not to have many regrets, but I do wish I could say to them, look, you don't need to drink this much.
Yeah, there's another way.
Yeah, and I'd love to talk to some of the big sober celebs out there, like in the US, who are doing it, and like what their experiences have been.
It's just normalising it, isn't it? I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, I've been Clemmie Telford, and this lovely lady has been Millie Gooch, and this has been Honestly. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe, and tell your mates all about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And before I go, one final thank you to F&F Clothing, without whom this podcast wouldn't have been possible. By supporting Honestly, these guys are making it possible for me to have these frank and open conversations about sticky, tricky, and otherwise not spoken about subjects. I've been Clemmie Telford, and this has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you for joining me in getting frank and getting open. We've hit that part, the shameless plug, but at least I'm being honest, right? That's the name of the game. So please do share your thoughts and reviews, tell your mates all about it, and better still, why not to press the big subscribe button? That way you'll get weekly doses of unadulterated honesty from me, Clemmie Telford. Thanks very much.